Morning, today's daf and kulin is Lamed Gimel. We're on Lamed Beis, and we're right in the middle of the Amud on Lamed Beis, and we are dealing with the following. We have a mission that we learned yesterday that if you shech the veshet, you shech the esophagus, upasakas a gargaris, and the gargaris snaps, or the opposite, the gargaris snaps, and afterwards you shech the veshet. And the Mishnah goes over a number of other scenarios which would disqualify the Shechita. So Rav Yisheva in the Mishnah said the animal's a Nevela. And Rabbi Kiva says it's a Treifa. Now Rav Yisheva says, let me give you the rule, it's very simple. If something occurs in the Shechita itself, in the Maisa Shechita itself, which disqualifies the Shechita, so that means that the animal went from living to dead without the benefit of a Shechita, and that would be called a Nevela. And that's the rule of Rav Yisheva. He quotes the B'Shem Rabbi Yoshua back in the Mishnah. Kol she'nifsala b'shechitas a Nevela. Okay, good. So that's a basic rule that if something went wrong in the Shechita, so then the animal's a Nevela. And again, as we've gone over numerous times, Nevela means that the animal now is not only Asur Ba'achila, but it also is going to be a Avatumah. It's going to be a source of Tumah, which is going to transmit Tumah both through Maga and through Masa. And Rabbi Akiva, at the end of the Mishnah, ends up conceding the point, Vahodolo Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, you're right. So Rabbi Akiva does turn on his position, and he says that in the cases that we mentioned the Mishnah, of either Psikas HaGargaris, or any of the other items mentioned in the Mishnah, where something went awry in the Shechita, so the animal is in fact a Nevela. Problem is that we are going to be starting the third parak of Chulin in a little over a week from today, and that first Mishnah goes through the 18 Trefas, Yurchet Trefas. And in the Yurches Trefos, the first two are Nekuvas HaVeshes, Upsukas HaGargaris. Although, in counting them, by the way, I think they count as one, but whatever the case is, the point is that they are clearly indicated as Trefos, not Nevelas. Okay, so how do we resolve that issue, that dilemma? Is it a Nevela or is it a Trefa? Now, I could tell you that, well, in our Mishnah, it's a Machlokas. That's true. I could also tell you that in the Mishnah, it no longer was a Machlokas. Meaning Rabbi Akiva ends up agreeing to Rabbi Shevav. And so therefore, there's no Machlokas in our Mishnah, at least not anymore. And so therefore, our Mishnah says Nevela, and the Mishnah Membe says it's a Trefa. And that presents a problem. So what we did yesterday is we went over a couple of suggestions in terms of how to deal with this dilemma. And the Gemara now is going to be going over a couple of other suggestions. So the Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish Amar, this is where we left off yesterday, right in the middle of the Amud. So a second suggestion of the Gemara. Remember, the Gemara yesterday suggested one answer by Rava. Maybe the Mishnah is only to be understood in one scenario, not in both scenarios. The Gemara didn't like that. Anyway, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish Amar, kan sheshachat b'makom chatach, kan sheshachat shelo b'makom chatach. So we're going to make a distinction over here between where exactly we are looking at the snap in the severing of the trachea. Is it b'makom shechita or is it not b'makom shechita? So b'makom chatach nifsal b'shechita hi. In other words, if it is b'makom shechita, so that is the psul in the shechita itself. And shelo b'makom chatach ki davar achar garmla lipasal damya. So therefore, if it's not b'makom shechita, so then we are going to be looking at it as an external variable, and it is therefore not part of the disqualified shechita, and therefore it renders the animal a trefa. Now, me and Rabbi Shimon Malakish Achiv, Amar Shimon Malakish Achiv, Zakana V'Achakach Nikva Hareya Kshera. So the Gemara says, well, I don't understand. Meaning, the Rabbi Shimon Malakish tells us the following halacha, that let's say you shech the trachea. Okay, so we are going to now slowly take our way through the act of shechita. And so first, obviously the first pipe you're going to hit is the trachea, and you cut the trachea. Now, when you cut the trachea, so, as we saw in graphic detail last week, for anyone who was at the presentation, so we know that the trachea obviously ends in the lungs. And obviously the lungs are getting their air, they're getting their oxygen from the trachea. Trachea is the tube providing it with its oxygen. So that means to say now when that, after you have now cut the trachea through the act of shechita, so how do we view the lungs halachically? As detached from the body. So much so, in fact, that if, let's say, immediately after you shech the kana, before the completion of shechita, somehow if you're able to either find out or do it yourself, put a puncture in the lungs. So it's really interesting. You're puncturing the lungs before the shechita has come to a conclusion, but after you cut the trachea. What's the halacha? Well, a puncture in the lungs by itself would render the animal a treifa, but not now. In other words, because you cut the trachea, so now the lungs are considered detached, severed from the body of the animal. They may be resting in the body, they are resting in the body, but halachically they're viewed as detached. And so therefore, the animal is in fact shera. Ama, what's the Gemara has a great way of framing this. Ama, kemanda mancha bidikula damya. Because it's basically like the lungs are in the basket. Meaning it's as if the lungs have been removed and have placed in the basket. So hachanami kamanda mancha bidikula damya. So therefore the Gemara says, look, if you shech the trachea, and then afterwards there's psukas agargaris, and then somewhere else in the trachea, so there is a severing of the trachea in another location. Doesn't matter. Shouldn't matter. Because once we do a legitimate shechita, a proper shechita on the trachea, whatever happens to the rest of the trachea from that point going forward is irrelevant. Totally irrelevant. So therefore the Gemara says, so this doesn't work as an answer. Good. All right. So Elam Rabbi Chia Bar Abba Am Rabbi Yochanan Kasha Kan Kodem Chazar Kan Lacher Chazar Umishn Lo Zazamim Koma. Okay. And the most straightforward answer is the following, and that is that the Mishnah in the beginning of the third parak is reflecting Rabbi Akiva's viewpoint. But Rabbi Akiva himself was Choser. In other words, he recanted from that position and he adopted Rabbi Sheva's position. All that's true. However, the Mishnah in Eilu Treifos is giving us Rabbi Akiva's viewpoint before he changed his position. And the Gemara, the way the Gemara puts it, Mishnah lo zazamim kama. Once we have a Mishnah, so and that Mishnah is, so to say, canonized. I mean, using the term loosely, but you understand. Once the Mishnah has been adopted as a Mishnah, as now part of the canon of Mishnayos, so that's it. We leave the Mishnah as it is. But things have changed. Rabbi Akiva's position has changed. All true, all correct. But Mishnah lo zazamim kama, so therefore the Mishnah Eilu Treifos is giving us Rabbi Akiva's original position. Although we now know that that's not reflective of Rabbi Akiva's final position, in which he concedes and admits to Rabbi Yeshiva's position that the animal is in fact a nevela. Gufa. Okay, Amar Rabbi Shimon Malaki Shachar Zakan V'Acharkach Nikva Hareak Shera. Okay, so it's such an interesting halacha the Gemara is going to come back to it. The Gemara is going to discuss it with a little more detail. You cut the trachea, so and then after cutting the trachea, there's now a puncture through the lungs. It does not render the animal trefa, because the lungs are now viewed as if they're in the basket once the trachea has been cut, and so therefore whatever happens subsequently to the lungs is totally irrelevant and will not affect the status of the animal whatsoever. As far as Reish Lakish is concerned, Rav is qualifying Reish Lakish, and he says you have to understand the anatomy. This halacha is only going to be relevant to the lungs because the lungs are literally anatomically connected to the trachea. Ava b'bnei ma'im lo. But let's say if there was a perforation of the intestines. A perforation of the intestines would make an animal trefa under normal circumstances. Let's say the intestines become perforated after I cut the trachea. We're not going to say over here that this is irrelevant. It's not irrelevant because the trachea is only connected to the lungs. The trachea are not connected to the intestines. The esophagus eventually is connected to the intestines, but not the trachea. So therefore, if after cutting the trachea, the intestines get a puncture in them, they're perforated, the animal is going to be a trefa. Now again, for you and I, makes perfect sense, meaning that the way Rav understands Reish Lakish, this is all anatomical. And so since the lungs are connected to the trachea, so after having shechted the trachea, so the lungs now are considered separate from the animal, but not the intestines. Okay, good. It really does make anatomical sense. However, Masi of Rabbi Zera Me'achar Shenodu Basimani Trefa, Hitarta, Mali Berea Mali Bivnei Mayim. So Rabbi Zera has a hard time understanding this, meaning we are now looking at Simani Trefa, and you are giving an allowance for Simani Trefa. Meaning, you're telling me that the lung, if it has a perforation, don't worry about it. And again, we know why we shouldn't worry about it, because Kemanda Mancha B'Dikul, it's like it's put in a basket. But ultimately, Rabbi Zera can't get past the fact that you just allowed something which normally would be Simani Trefa. And so Rabbi Zera says, so I don't see the difference. What's the difference between the lungs and the intestines? Now, obviously, Rabbi Zera knows the anatomy, and he understands the svara that was given by Rava, but still, Rabbi Zera can't get past the point. Once you're being matir trefas, so I don't see the difference between the two. But then, Upon further consideration, Reb Zera ends up retracting his position, and he ends up acknowledging, you know what, you're right. You're right. There is a difference between the lungs and the intestines, because the lungs aren't connected to the trachea, the intestines are not. And how do we know that Reb Zera himself ends up reconsidering? So the Gemara explains. So, Debai Reb Zera. Because Reb Zera asked the following question, Nikva b'nei ma'ayim ben simla siman mahu. The Gemara is going to ask Rabbi Zera's question, follow up with another question, which are basically principled, founded on the same idea. And that is the following. Consider. When I shecht, this is just overall always the way to view shechita. Shechita accomplishes two things. One, prevents the animal from being an avela. Two, allows you and I to eat the animal. So there is a tahara element to shechita, and there is a achila element to shechita every single time we're shechting an animal. We're preventing tumah, and we're allowing it to be eaten. Okay. Now, let's say you can't eat it. Let's say the animal's a treifa. Shechita still accomplishes its first purpose. Shechita will prevent the animal from being a nevela. In other words, it's a treifa. We can't eat it because it's a treifa, but it's not a nevela. Good. So even if shechita is coming only to provide one purpose and not two purposes, that would be fine. Ah. Here comes the question. It's such a lumdish question, such a great conceptual question. Let's say mid-shechita, our mission now changes. Meaning at the beginning of the shechita, this shechita was there to provide both prevention of tumah and a heter achila. And then mid-shechita, so we got orders from above. That's just an expression. I don't really mean that. But in other words, I'll explain better in just a moment. But mid-shechita, now this shechita no longer is a two mission shechita, it's only one mission, only to prevent the animal from being an avela. Can I combine those two shechitas? If the beginning of the shechita is a twofold shechita, and the second half of the shechita is only a one purpose shechita, can those shechitas combine? Do we basically say that shechita is shechita, and whatever it accomplishes, and therefore these two shechitas can be combined, or no? Do we say that they are fundamentally two different types of shechita, and I can't combine the two? Let's deal with the Gemara's first question. These two questions of the Gemara, first question is being asked by Rabbi Zera, and the second question of the Gemara is kind of like a follow-up. It's the same basic idea. In the first case, which Rabbi Zera himself asks, let's say we do the following. Let's say you start the shechita, so you cut through the trachea. Good. So far, so good. It looks like we're going to be enjoying dinner tonight. And of course, the animal is not going to be an avela. But then before you cut the esophagus, so then a hole of perforation goes through the intestines. How it happened, how you know it happened after you cut the trachea, I leave the details aside right now. I just like dealing with the abstract scenario. The intestines get a hole in them immediately after you shech the trachea. The animal now is a trefa. And we're not going to eat the animal tonight. However, can now, as me cutting through the esophagus, can I at least prevent it from becoming a nevela? So in other words, now as we're cutting through the esophagus, we now know this second half of the shechita is not going to be there for a heter achila. It's only going to be there to prevent it from becoming a nevela. Can I take the first half of shechita as I was cutting the trachea, which had a twofold purpose to it, and the second half of shechita as I was cutting the esophagus, which only has one purpose to it, and can I combine those two? Is shechita shechita basically the same shechita, just with different purposes, or no? A two-purpose shechita is fundamentally different than a one-purpose shechita, and this is Rabbi Zera's question. Now, you obviously see in the question itself that Rabbi Zera obviously retracted from his original point. His original point was, I don't see the difference between the lungs and the intestines. If you're ready to matir the lungs, you should matir the intestines as well. But obviously, in this question that he's asking, he obviously is changing his tune. Because over here, if after having cut the trachea, if it makes no difference now, so then if you make a perforation in the intestines, so what? Obviously, when he's asking this question, he realizes that making a perforation in the intestines after you cut the trachea is still a big deal. Big deal meaning the animal is, in fact, rendered a trefa. Good. So that's the whole point over here. So I'll just read inside the by Rabbi Zera Nikva b'nei ma'ayim ben simla siman mahu mimitzar siman rishla siman shen letar midei nevela. Olo. So good. So that's the Gemara's question. The Gemara leaves this question unresolved, but in the question itself, you see that Rabbi Zera had a change of mind. And furthermore, the Gemara says, Milo And the Gemara says, you know, this is exactly the same question that Ilfa himself asked. What was the question of Ilfa? We're going to spend a lot of time later in the Masechta dealing with the Ben Pakua, where the fetus was growing, developing inside of the mother, and Yeshecht the mother, and that serves as a heter for the fetus as well. Okay, the presentation last week, for those of you who were not there, I described this many times to many different people. It was a biology class turned into a halacha class turned into a drama. For those of you who do not know, the goat was pregnant. And none of us knew that, not even the shochet, the presenter. So, so the halacha is that with a proper shechita, so not only can you eat the animal, but you can eat the developing fetus inside. However, as we're going to be spending a lot of time later in the sect learning, the fetus is only mutter with through shechitas imo only when the fetus is in utero. If any limb of the fetus exits before the shechita occurs, so that limb that exited is not going to be nitar b'shechitas imo. It has to be physically cocooned in the mother in order to enjoy the benefit of that shechita. Okay, I understand he's not enjoying it. We're enjoying it, but yeah, we all understand. Okay, but if any limb comes out, that limb is now not going to be nitar through the shechita. Question. This is now the Gemara's follow-up question. This is Ilfa's question. So again, you cut the trachea, the fetus was inside. And then after having cut the trachea, now one of the limbs of the fetus now emerges from the mother. So, the limb that comes out is inedible. In other words, it did not receive a shechita. Fine, that part I get. But can we at least say that the cutting of the second siman of the mother is going to prevent tumas nevela coming onto the limb of that animal? Because again, it's the same question. Meaning, in now, the second siman, as we're cutting the esophagus of the mother, so now is vis-a-vis the fetus, and more specifically, the limb of the fetus that's emerged, it's not going to be a matir for achila, but at least let it be preventative of it becoming a nevela. And again, it's the same exact question. Can a first half of a shechita, second half of the shechita, if they're not accomplishing the same purpose, can these two shechitas combine? And the Gemara says, fine. So I can lo yibayin lan ela latar midei nevela, ava ba'achila asura. And the only question now is nevela lifted? But certainly, we all know that you can't eat it. Okay. So, yeah.
Is this question connected to whether she requires kavana?
Right. It's funny. I have a somewhat related issue, which is just a thought of mine. I haven't seen anyone discuss it. And that is, what if you hold, does this relate to the machlokas of shechita, whether it's mitchila v'atzof or it's just at the end? Meaning over here, we are giving a lot of significance to the first half of shechita. So if it's just prep, like the Gemara suggested earlier, right, machlokas Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, so if it's just prep, so halachically, it could very well be nothing, just prep. In any event, I don't know the answer to your question, I don't know the answer to my own, but anyway. Amalei Rav Adar bar Avla Ravina Dumalolam Lohadar Bey, and the Gemara says, look, we could make the argument that Rabbi Zera himself never changed his mind, even though from the question that he asked, it's clear that he did. But the Gemara just simply says, all we know is that when Rabbi Zera is conversing with Rava, he's going to converse with him on his terms. Meaning he knows Rava makes a clear distinction between the trachea and the lungs, and the piercing of the lungs, and the trachea and the piercing of the intestines. He knows that Rava feels that way. So as he's talking to Rava, he's speaking to him on his terms, but maybe Rav Zera himself does not really see a difference between them. So we don't know. The Gemara is just simply being a little bit argumentative. We don't know for sure that Rabbi Zera changed his mind. It could very well be that he was just conversing with Rava on Rava's terms. Okay, let's continue in the Gemara. So we have now in front of us a really interesting concept, and that is the following. In the process of Shechita, so when does the animal become permitted? At the end of Shechita. But in other words, as we're going through the process, as you cut the trachea, so that basically now means that the trachea now, anything connected to the trachea, i.e. the lungs, is no longer considered part of the animal. It's now disconnected. It's detached from the animal. Good. It's a really powerful idea. It's so much so, as we learned earlier this morning, is that if after you cut the trachea, the lungs develop a perforation running through them, which under normal circumstances would render the animal a trepha, but not here, because the lungs are viewed as if they're put in the basket. They are simply now disconnected from the animal, and so therefore whatever happens to the lungs from this point going forward will not affect the status of the animal whatsoever. Now, that's not true by the intestines, because the intestines are not connected to the trachea. And so Rava says that if the intestines get a perforation after you cut the trachea, then the animal is in fact a trepha. Fine. All this is well and good. And now watch where we go in the Gemara with this idea. Now, you want to sit down tonight and you want to eat kishka. Okay, and kishka in the traditional way, real kishka, right? Again, with our presenter last week, so he took the intestines out, and he told us this is 20 times. By the way, the intestines are 20 times the length of the animal when stretched out. So he took the intestines, and maybe some of you remember the kishka itself. I'm going to be honest with you. I ate kishka pretty recently, but not in this country, in a different country. Anyway, it's fine. Okay. So watch now. If I, let's say, want to eat kishka, so no problem at all. Not only no problem, but I'll invite my friends over. But when I say my friends, I mean my Jewish friends. But however. You cannot, this is now Rav Acha's extension of Reish Lakish. You can't invite your non-Jewish friends over to enjoy your kishka with you. Now, why not? And here's where it gets really interesting.
Chopped liver?
Kishka.
Yeah, but that's...
Wait. One thing at a time. one thing at a time. Ve'im ezam nov dikachav ma'bnei ma'ay. My time, Yisrael de'b'shchita taliyam osa kem dikashchita ma'ayasi ishtar lehu. Because look, as far as we're concerned, so we have hilchos shchita. And so that means as follows. Yes, it's true. The moment that I cut the trachea, so the lungs are now considered severed from the animal. And the moment that I cut the esophagus, so now that means that all that which is connected to the esophagus, i.e. the intestines, are now severed from the animal. Now, did the animal die as of yet? I'm talking about death, I'm talking about physiological death. Did the animal die as of yet? No, but it's going to happen really soon. But that means to say is as follows. How am I eating the lungs? I know we don't eat lungs. And how am I eating the intestines? Well, the answer is really simple. Because we have this halacha called shechita. And shechita tells us that even though death isn't immediately following the cutting of the trachea and the esophagus, it's going to happen really soon afterwards. But nevertheless, so this is the method of allowance of how we eat the animal. Because the Torah gives us the halachas of shechita. Okay, good. That's for you and me. What about a guy? So the guy has very few halachas as it relates to kashrus. In fact, we can go a little bit further. He only has one halacha as it relates to kashrus, and that's Eiver Min HaChai. You can't take a limb off of a live animal and eat that limb. And even if the animal later subsequently dies, it doesn't matter. In other words, once the limb is ripped off of an animal, that limb has the status of Eiver Min HaChai, and a guy can't eat it. Oh, now let's think this through. This is amazing. So that means to say that when you cut the trachea, the animal's not dead yet. Oh, so what do we say? What does that say regarding the lungs? The lungs is Eiver Min HaChai. Right? I'm going to pause for a moment, think about it. Like I was going to say digest it, but okay. Maybe not here. But in other words, think about it. And the same thing is true regarding the intestines. Meaning when I cut the esophagus, the animal's not dead yet. So what does that mean to all the parts that are connected to the esophagus, the stomachs and the intestines? That too is also Eiver Min HaChai. Now again, for you and I, we have shechita. We have hilchos shechita. And hilchos shechita tells us that for all of us, the shechita is serving as a matir for every part of the animal. But if you don't have hilchos shechita, and you only have the halachas of Eiver Min HaChai, what the Gemara now is saying is totally logical. The lungs are now considered Eiver Min HaChai. The intestines are now considered Eiver Min HaChai. And so that means to say now, and it's an unbelievable conclusion, that now as you sit down to eat your kishka, so you like inviting people over, you like hosting. Okay, great. For the kishkas, you can only serve it to a Jew. You can't serve it to a non-Jew.
So when did they ever lose that status according to non-Jews?
What?
For non-Jews, when did these parts lose that status?
Is it possible, I was thinking the same thing, the Gemara does not reveal, is there a way for the for the guy to be able to eat intestines under any circumstances? I kill the animal in some other method other than the intestines. I'm just thinking out loud right now. Forgive me. Maybe killing the animal without the simanim, right? Like, in other words, you know, maybe try, you know.
What's the difference? What's the difference? Kills it to hitting him or shechting?
Okay. Anyway, I'll tell you what.
I don't understand why they have a menachai.
You don't understand why it's ever menachai?
No. Once it dies.
Okay. When I pull a limb off of an animal. So that limb that I pulled off is Aver Menachai.
Right.
And at the subsequent death of the animal, that's not going to change the status of the limb. The limb will remain Aver Menachai. So the same thing is true with the lungs and the intestines. The lungs and the intestines were detached from the animal prior to the death of the animal. And so due to the Shechita. And this is what the Gemara is saying. Yeah, right? So as a result of that, they are now considered status-wise Aver Menachai. It's really interesting. Okay. So the Gemara.
So Shechita is not just the esophagus and the trachea. You have to have the artery also.
No. Meaning yes and no. Meaning you're going to cut the arteries. I understand that, but it doesn't have to be. In other words, the Shechita is the chaticha shnei asimonim. That is Shechita at its very essence. Okay. So Shechita ma'ayos yishar lu avdi kochavin de benechiras tagi lahu uvemisa taliyamosa hani ke'aver menachai dami. It's like aver menachai. Now, it's really interesting, by the way. I don't want to sit too long on this. We have a lot more Gemara to do today. But the Gemara says, Hani ki Aver Menachai Damu. It's like Aver Menachai. I struggle a little bit with the Gemara over here because I thought the whole thrust of the Gemara is that it is Aver Menachai. Why the Gemara says it's ki Aver Menachai, I'm not sure, but in any regard. So Amra Papa, Havi Yasimna Kamen de Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. Now, Rav Papa says, I was sitting in front of Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. And apparently he was saying this, he was making this point numerous times. And Rav Papa basically said, here's what I wanted to say. I was so interested in saying this. Now, what held him back? Unclear, but Ubay de Emale, I wanted to say to Mika Midisol Shari Ulaovikochavim Asr. Velo Amrile. But I didn't say that to him, and I'll explain what that means in just a moment. Da Amina had time a kamer. And because look, what he's saying sounds reasonable, sounds rational, and so therefore I didn't want to make the counter argument. What is the counter argument? Again, a really interesting counter-argument. What comes out now is something which is both amazing and, according to Rav Papa, untenable. And that is that we cannot have something in this world that for us Jews would be something which would be mutter, and for a non-Jew would be aser. Meaning, the burden of responsibility of Torah and mitzvos, and that means, right, extra responsibilities is given to the Jewish people. So what comes out now, according to what Rav Acha is suggesting, is, well, there's something that for us would be okay, but for non-Jew would be prohibited. Meaning that the whole mission statement of B'nai Yisrael is that we have this extra responsibility. We have the extra mitzvos and all the additional Yisurim. It can't be that there's something coming out now where that for us it's going to be mutter and for a guy it's going to be aser. Right? That's the argument of Mi'ika Midi de Yisrael Sharei. And so therefore it just, meaning I understand the logic behind Rav Acha, says Rav Papa, but the conclusion, however, is just simply an untenable conclusion. Now, again, I'll just, sorry for raising so many issues in one daf, but in other words, if the rationale of Rav Acha is a correct rationale, so how can the svar of Mi'ika Midi then go ahead and upset the rationale? Meaning Mi'ika Midi operates on what level? That's a Daraisa svara. It's a Derabbanan Svara. It's not perfectly understandable, but I do understand the concept in general. Anyway, Tanya Dilok Rabbi Acha Bar Yaakov, the Braisa, the Gemara quotes the Braisa that clearly rejects Rav Acha Bar Yaakov's position. Let's say you want to eat the meat of the animal before the animal dies. Okay. In other words, back in the day, if I could just give you a little bit of medicine, circa 3rd century, 4th century. So back in the day, so for people who were a little bit weaker in nature and wanted to really reinvigorate themselves, so they would eat meat, they would eat really raw, fresh meat, the freshest meat you can imagine, plus also be better, bonus, if it was saturated with blood. Now, as a Jew, obviously, this presents a lot of problems. First of all, we have to wait till the animal dies, and secondly, we're not allowed to eat blood. But still, in other words, if we can get that kind of really raw, fresh meat, so that, back in the day, that served as really therapeutic. And with that in mind, so what do you do? So basically, take the meat from the animal immediately after shechita, and meat right from the neck, right from the makam shechita. Now, what you have to do, a couple things over here you have to take into consideration in order for us to eat that kind of meat. So, so what you're going to do is immediately after shechita, you cut off a little bit of meat. You salt it and you rinse it, which presents, by the way, the Gemara over here presents a lot of problems because if we're going to roast it, do we need to salt in addition to that? Generally, the rinsing comes before the salting, not after the salting. Actually, the halacha is that the rinsing comes before and after the salting. Okay. I'm sorry for raising so many issues so quickly, but anyway, the point is that there is a way to get to eat that meat. Umamtim lacha tapes the nafsha. So, another thing, wait till the animal stops convulsing. Even though, according to the strict letter of the law, we are allowed to eat the meat immediately after shechita. Shechita is the matir, but nevertheless, wait until after it, until it finishes convulsing. And finally, va'ochlo echad ovikocham ve'echad yisrael mutarim bo. And who's allowed to eat from this? So both a Jew and a non-Jew. Now you ask the question. I'll ask the question. A non-Jew is allowed to eat it. We cut it from the animal before the animal died. It's Avram and Achai. How can the non-Jew eat it? We can eat it because shechita is a matir. But how can the non-Jew eat it? And again, so what this Bryce is telling us is that that thought of Rav Papa, which he wanted to say but he didn't say, but that thought of Rav Papa is in fact the accepted halacha. Mi ika midi. We can't have something that to us becomes permitted and to a non-Jew becomes prohibited. So even though, yes, you can construct a really good argument that's Avram and Achai, but the mi ika midi trumps the idea that the animal is, that this particular meat is Avram and Achai. Misayela Rav Idi Bar Avindam, Rav Idi Bar Avindam, Rav Yisrael Bar Ashian, Harosa Shiavri, a person who wants to become healthy. So what meat do you go for? Chote, Chazai is possible. Beis Chita Shobahem, O Mochu Yafa Yafa, O Madicha Yafa Yafa, O Mamtim La Shetape Savsha, Echad of Ekocham, Vecha Yisrael Mutarm Bo. And good, and it's a memra of the Amara, and the Brisa now is a support for exactly what was said by the memra as well. Yeah, correct. Correct, right, right. The what's it called? What they call these things? Superfoods. Okay, good. We learned about a new superfood for today.
Don't we have this problem with Sheva Mitzvah Bin and Noah? They all have they're chayv misa for all of them.
Yes.
So if we don't set up courts, we're not chayv misa.
Okay, fine, but that's the onesh, meaning. But right now we're just talking about the isser. Meaning, you're right. There's an onesh for them to deliberately do so. But we're focusing right now on the Isser. And as far as the Isser is concerned, so he shouldn't be able to eat it. We shouldn't provide the Isser for him. But then the Gemara says it's true, but the conclusion is just untenable. We can't have something that's permissible for us and prohibited for him. Okay. Let's start the next Mishnah. And, okay, if you like Tumah Tahara, so you're going to love these next stopping. The rest of today's daf, tomorrow's daf after that. And so a good part of the end of the second perek is going to deal with the laws of Tumah Tahara. Now, I'm telling you, I'm saying this from personal experience, the more you hear it, the more you understand, the more you digest. So if this is your first round of hearing about Hilchos Tumah Tahara, so admittedly, I'm going to do this way too fast, and you're going to be a little bit lost. And I apologize on the front end. However, just the more times that this generates, like, just you understand all the basics involved, it really does. There's a logical construct to all the laws of Tumah Tahara. It is a system. It all operates with rules and regulations. And once you know all the rules, everything follows suit. It really does, quote unquote, make sense. It takes time. In other words, especially if you don't have familiarity with all the rules and regulations, it takes time to get comfortable with these rules so that you understand. The Mishnah starts off, Ashoche behem achai va'ofa lo yasa mehem dam, kisherim. You shecht an animal and something nearly impossible occurs, and that is there's no blood flow. Blood's not coming out of the animal as you shecht. Now, you can make a really strong argument, hey, something's really wrong over here. Meaning, how can there be no flow of blood? And yet, it's a really interesting halacha, which the Mishnah tells us, and that is that the animal's kosher. You know, if anything would indicate that something's wrong over here, I think lack of blood flow would be a pretty good indicator. Now, I'm not a cardiologist, but I got one sitting right to my right. so I think we can agree. In other words, he'll just simply nod his head as if I'm correct. Nevertheless, the halacha is that the animal is in fact not trefa, not nevela. The animal is kosher animal. Now, v'nechalim b'yadayim misu abos. And now here comes a bonus. Not only is the animal kosher, but our hands are a sheni l'tumah. As a general gzera de rabbanan, once we have distracted ourselves from our hands now become a sheni l'tumah. It's a din de rabbanan, it's a tumah de rabbanan that exists in all of our hands. And we only know from this halacha vis-a-vis when we eat bread. When we eat bread, so nowadays our requirement is to wash our hands in order to remove the sheni l'tumah status from our hands. Good. Wonderful. That's the remnant of the halacha of sheni l'tumah. But back in the day when they were eating kachim and truma, so hands being a sheni was day-to-day living. And so now this animal that did not bleed at the time of shechita, so you get a bonus with this animal. Because not only can you eat this animal, but even with your yadayim misu abos, even with your dirty hands, dirty over here, I don't mean hygienically dirty, I mean halachically dirty, meaning your hands are sheni l'tumah. Now why? Why is that? Lefi shalahuchshu rabadam. Because in order for any food to become tame, what do you need in order for a food to become tame? Hechsher. It needs to come into contact with one of the seven liquids. Now one of the seven liquids is blood. So generally after you shech, so blood now is flowing onto the floor over the animal, and that creates a hechsher. But because we had a bloodless shechita, so therefore there was no hechsher, and so therefore we have now meat that never was mukhshir l'kabel tuma, and so therefore I can eat it with my yadayim misuabos. Now at this point in time, I kind of hope you're wondering, well, let's think this through. The animal over here is what? Food. What are your hands? A sheni l'tumah. Your hands, which are a sheni l'tumah, cannot transmit tumah into regular food. Now, if this was a carbon that we were talking about, so then we can have a discussion. It's not a carbon. And there are four pieces of evidence that it's not a carbon. Stay tuned. We're going to go over the four pieces of evidence in just a little bit. Now, Rabbi Shimon Amar Huchshur B'Shechita. Rabbi Shimon has a really interesting position, which we're going to be discussing later in the Masechta, and that is that seven liquids create hechsher, and so does shechita. The act of shechita in of itself creates hechsher. How exactly that works, stay tuned. We're going to come back to that point of Rabbi Shimon later. Now, time of the lo yatsa mehem dam, hayatsa mehem dam e'nechalam b'yadayim esu abos. So the Gemara now will be spending the rest of today's daf trying to address a simple question in Tumah Tahara. Your hands are a sheni, right? The Tumah de Rabbanan of one's hands is that it is a sheni l'tumah. And so let's say this was a regular shechita that involved blood. And so when you shechted the animal, blood flowed everywhere. Now the animal is mukhshir l'kabel tumah. And so what? And so what? Your hands now are a sheni. The animal in question over here now is mukhshir l'kabel tumah. It's susceptible to receive tumah. But it's not going to get tumah from your hands. Your hands are only a sheni. And by chulin, there is no transmission of tumah from a sheni to a shlishi by chulin. You only go to a shlishi by truma and by karpon, but not by chulin. So, ama yadayim shneiosein vein sheni osa shlishi bechulin. Good. So I don't understand. It's a simple question. It's going to occupy the rest of our day today. How is it that if it's a standard regular shechita with blood and the animal now is mukhshir l'kabel tumah, but so what? Your hands are not able to transmit the tumah over to the animal. It's a really fundamental question. Now, how do I know the animal is talking about chulin and not karbon? So there are four indicators. If you go back over the Mishnah, you could easily come up with two of the four, but there are four in total. And the Gemara is going to go with them. So the first observation that our Mishnah is not talking about kachim is because look what we're shechting in our Mishnah. Behema chaya va'of. Behema could serve as a carbon, so can oaf. Chaya never serves as a carbon. And so therefore, we know we're not talking about carbonus because of the three animals, chaya is mentioned, chaya is not a carbon. Now already that point in of itself is like it's a slam dunk. There's nothing really else to discuss. However, there are three other points to take into consideration as well. Visu. Ibe kachim ki lo yatsa mehem dam kshera. Hu atzma ladam hu tzarech. And if this is a carbon, so what good is a bloodless shechita by a karban? There's no zrika. Right. The only reason why we're shechting a karban is to get that blood to do zrikas adam. Mm-hmm. That is achieving kapara. Without the blood, there's no kapara, there's no point. And so therefore, a bloodless shechita by a karban, what would be its point?
Right.
Now, a point that I'd say would be a little bit more subtle, but however, it's just a stronger point, and that's the following. The blood of carbon is not machshir, meaning there are seven liquids that are serving as a hechshir. Where those seven liquids come into contact with a food, the food now is mukshir l'kabel tumah, susceptible to becoming tameh. Blood being one of the seven, but not all blood. Blood of chulin is a machshir. Blood of a carbon is not a machshir. It's a gzeres hakasuf. The Gemara spells it out. The Torah says that when you have blood, so you spill it onto the ground, like water. The only kind of blood that serves as a hechsher, like water does, is only the blood that's spilled on the ground. The blood of carbon is not spilled on the ground. In fact, we don't want it to spill on the ground. We want to collect it in a bowl. We want to sprinkle it on the mizbeach. And so therefore, the dam of a carbon does not have this quality of ala aretz tishpachenu kamayim, and therefore it does not serve as a machshir. That's point number three. And point number four, v'suhi b'kashim ki lo yotze mehem dam lo mizkashrei, l'skashrei b'chibas ha-kodesh t'kaimelan, chibas ha-kodesh mechmachsharatan. Finally, we know that when it comes to anything that is carbon-related, so we have this idea of Chibas HaKodesh. What does Chibas HaKodesh teach us? Then anything carbon-related immediately, automatically, is Mukhshar L'Kabel Tumah. Even non-foods of carbon are Mukhshar L'Kabel Tumah, are susceptible to becoming Tameh. The wood that we're going to put up onto the Mizbeach is Mukhshar L'Kabel Tumah. Why? How? And the answer is Chibas HaKodesh. Simply because of the love that we have for anything that is carbon-related, so that creates the immediate hechsher. So even if, and by at this point in time, there's no even if, because we already rejected it on three counts. But even if the bloodless shechita, it was a bloodless shechita of a karban, of course it's going to be mukhshar l'kabel tumah based on the principle of chibas hakodesh. Okay, so for four separate reasons, we know that our mishnah is talking about chulin, it's not talking about a karban. And so that just simply resurrects now our original question. Your hands are shein al tumah. The tumah de rabbanon of one's hands are shnios. And so therefore, when they touch the food, if the food is or is not machsher, now if it's not machsher l'kabel tumah, if it's not mukhsher l'kabel tumah, obviously there's nothing to talk about. But even if it is mukhsher l'kabel tumah, so what? Your hands are a sheini. Your hands are not going to render the meat of that animal into a shlishi, because there is no shlishi by chulin. And so what we have on our hands now, pun intended, thank you. What we have on our hands now is a problem. And the Gemara now is going to try to offer solutions to this problem a number of different ways. Let's start off this morning with a couple of solutions, suggested solutions. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rava Baravuach, B'chulin Shalachem, B'kesef Meister, Askinon, D'loker, Rav Mimeir. So the first solution is as follows. It's a chulin animal, no argument. However, how did you obtain this chulin animal? So we know that in the first, second, fourth and fifth year of the Shemitah cycle, your second 10%, your Meister Sheni, now is to be taken and eaten in Yerushalayim. However, here's what you could do. You could take your Meister Sheni, transfer the Kedusha onto money, take the money, and when on your next visit to Yerushalayim, buy food with that money, including animals, and you can now eat that food with the Kedusha of Meister Sheni, meaning that you can only eat in Yerushalayim. So I'm now going to be buying an animal in Yerushalayim with my Meister Sheni money, and that animal now is Kedushas Meister Sheni. Oh, so I'm now you have to wonder, does Meister Sheni have potentially the ability to become a Shlishi Latoma? That's such a good question. It's a machlokas, which we're going to see in just a moment. Now, on the spectrum of Kedusha, where does Meister Sheni exist? So if chulin is all the way at one end of the spectrum and carbon is all the way at the other end of the spectrum, so what I would do, if we are going to create our degrees of kedusha, it'll go chulin, meister sheni, truma, and carbon. Carbon being obviously the most holy, chulin being not holy at all, and so I would put meister sheni and truma. Now we know that truma can in fact become susceptible to becoming a shlishi. That's a din d'oraisa. What about Maaser Sheni? Where does Maaser Sheni exist? We know it exists between Chulin and Truma. Ah, and so now I ask you a simple question, but I know the answer is that it's a machlokas. Can Maaser Sheni become susceptible to becoming a Shlishi? So the Gemara says it's a machlokas, and in order to support our answer right now, we have to say that we're not going like Rav Meir did none. And here and now we're going to be learning a Mishnah together. The Mishnah and Parah teaches us, Kol Haton Bias Mayim B'Divrei Sofrim. Anything that requires tefillah b'mikvah on a rabbinic level, meaning your hands. Your hands require Bias Mayim B'Divrei Sofrim. Right now, obviously you can remove the tumah from your hands with a keli, and by pouring a Revias Mayim over your hands from a keli, or what you can also do is you could just simply put them in the mikvah. How is this different than anything else that becomes tamei? Well, actually, there is a subtle difference. It's interesting. If it's a tumah de araisa that requires tefillah b'mikvah, it does not become tahor immediately. What do you need? Erev shemesh. You need to wait until the evening. So you need tefillah b'mikvah and erev shemesh. However, if it's a tumah de rabbanan like yadayim, you put them in the mikvah, you take them out, they're good to go. They're good. Anyway, kol atam mayim medivrei sofrim. So anything that requires bias mayim medivrei sofrim, another word to describe yadayim, which are shneos. So metame is a kodesh. So if your hands touch kodesh, your hands are going to be metame the kodesh. Upostel is a truma, and they're going to disqualify the truma. Why do we use different words for truma and for kodesh? So if you heard the halachas of tumah tahara enough, you know the answer. I'll explain it right now. When it comes to kodesh, so we know that kodesh, anything which is a karbon, can become a shlishi and can become a revi. When your hands, which are shneos, touch kodesh, that means that not only have you rendered it tameh, but also given it the ability to pass the tumah on to another piece of karbon. And that's why it's called, it's mitameh es hakodesh, because not only is the kodesh itself tameh, but passes it along. Masha'inkin, when it comes to truma, it's posel es hatruma, because when your hands touch the truma, it makes it tameh, but that's where the line ends. In other words, it doesn't pass it on. That's why we use the term posel. So it's metamis the kodesh posel so truma umat bechulin of a meiser divrei Rabbi Meir. And as Rabbi, according to Rabbi Meir, yadayim do not affect chulin, and it does not affect meiser sheni. Good. So that sheet is Rabbi Meir. So we already know from the get go that the answer is not going to work according to Rabbi Meir. Good. The chachamim osrim b'meiser, and the chachamim say that it's osrim b'meiser, meaning that the chachamim place meiser sheni on the same level as truma. Interesting, by the way, the word he uses is, sorry, I'm back. The word that he uses is oser, not poso. But okay, but anyway, it's oser b'meister sheni. Oser b'meister. Maskel Rav Shimi Barashi mimai. So Rav Shimi Barashi does not like this answer, because the answer that we're giving right now is that it's a chulin animal that was purchased with meister sheni money, and we're holding like the chachamim that meister sheni is in fact sensitive enough where it can become puzzle through your yadayim. Seems like a good answer. Rav Shimi Bar Ashi says it's not a good answer. He simply does not agree. Mi mai demai kan lepligi rabban ala de Rabbi Meir ela ba'achilas meiser. I know there's a machlokas in that Mishnah Parah. I know the Mishnah Parah, but says Rav Shimi. But that Mishnah Parah is talking only about consumption. It's not talking about negiyah. Ava b'negiyah de meiser ba'achila de chulin lepligi. But when it comes to just simply contact, if your hands are just touching the Meiser Sheni, it will not affect Meiser Sheni, even according to the Chachamim. Now, what's the difference between Achila and Negia? Why are we going to be more Machmer as it relates to Achila than that of Negia? So presumably, I take that word back. The answer would seemingly be, because when it comes to Achila, so when you're eating, you put different foods in your mouth at the same time. And there's always a concern that you're going to be eating truma in conjunction with the Meiser Sheni. And if you're eating truma in conjunction with the Meiser Sheni, so then the truma itself will, in fact, become disqualified on a Daraisa level. If we're just talking about Negia, generally you touch one thing at a time. Okay, maybe that's the Svara, but in any event, in any regard, the Machlokas is only by Achila, not by Negia. V'ha Negia hi. We are talking in our Mishnah about Negia. How do I know that? If you look carefully, read our Mishnah carefully, our Mishnah says, not ochlin biyadayim mesuabos, but ne'echalin. It could be eaten with dirty hands, with hands which are sheni, which presumably means that you're picking it up and you're feeding it to somebody else. So I'm just talking about negiyah, it's not talking about achila per se. Yes, obviously it results in achila, but the focus of our Mishnah is on negiyah. So Elamara Papa Hache Beyadaim Tchila Saskinan, Reb Shimon Ben Elazarhi. So the Gemara now is going to take us down a different approach, down a different avenue in terms of how to solve for our problem. Again, just to reset. The problem is that our Mishnah says that a bloodless shechita, the animal is mutter, and on top of that, as a bonus, you get to eat the animal with hands that are yadayim, shnios, and we don't have to worry about the animal becoming tame, because the animal never received hechsher. Good. And the problem is that, I don't understand, even if the animal did receive hechsher, so, and the animal, it was a regular bleeding shechita, which means that the animal is now mukhshar lekabel tumah. So what? Your hands are asheni. Your hands, which are asheni, are not transmitting tumah to a behemoth chulin. That's the problem. So one solution we tried was that maybe the animal, chulin animal in question, is really a maister sheni animal as well, with the kedusha of maister sheni. The Gemara did not love that answer. Their second approach of the Gemara is as follows. Maybe we're talking about a very specific scenario in which your hands are a rishon. Now, it's a little bit challenging because we know that the tumah derabbanan of yadayim are a sheni, not a rishon. There are circumstances, according to one opinion, that your hands can actually become a rishon. Let's see this together inside. We learn together a braisa. Ditanya. Ein yadayim tchilos l'chulin, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar amar mishum Rabbi Meir, yadayim tchilos l'chulin, ushnios l'tshuma. So the braisa, which, as you read it, is more or less indecipherable. but the Gemara immediately is going to decipher. The way the Braisa reads is that Yadayim are not Rishon regarding Chulin, and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says in the name of Rabbi Meir that there are a Rishon for Chulin, but a Sheni for Truma. Okay. Tchilos of Chulin in L'Truma lo, and just, in other words, even without any understanding whatsoever, it's like an impossible statement of the Braisa. That according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, so for Chulin, your hands are a Rishon. But for Truma, your hands are a Sheni. What? We're going to be more machmir by Chulin than we are by Truma? It's just impossible. So, Hachi Kamar. So, obviously, we need immediately a clarification of the Braisa. Tchilos af l'chulin and shnios l'truma. Shnios l'truma. L'truma in l'chulin lo. Okay, fine. So what we mean is as follows, is that when we say that your hands are a rishon, it's af l'chulin, meaning of course your hands are going to be a rishon for truma, but for chulin as well. Shnios l'truma in l'chulin lo. But if your hands are just a shnios, so they will only affect truma and they will not affect chulin. Okay. Now, so basically what we just learned is as follows, that according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, if your hands are in fact rishon l'truma, it begs the question, how do we get there? We're going to answer that in just a moment. But if your hands are a rishon, so that means to say now that it will affect, meaning transmit tuma, to both chulin and to truma. Good. Now, umika yadayim tchilos. How does your hands become a rishon? Okay, and obviously the question really begs, because, look, if you touch something which is an avatoma, your hands don't become a rishon. You become a rishon, meaning that's not a yadayim issue. That's a you issue, meaning minotaur, you become a rishon. So we're looking for a scenario, and it's a real sliver of halacha. We're looking for a scenario in which just the hands themselves become a rishon. Now the hands becoming a sheni, that's the general tumah gzera derabanan of yadayim, where your hands are a sheni. And by the way, what I did not do since the beginning of this entire sugya, I didn't go through the history of why your hands are sheni. It goes back to Shlomo HaMelech. It's based on the Gemara and Shabbos. Right? Okay. Good. Sorry. But in other words, but the Tumah Derabbanan of hands are a sheni. When do hands become a rishon? So the Gemara says it can happen, but it's within a really, really sliver of the world of Tumah and Tahara. The Tanya, the Gemara here quotes a Braisa. It's a mission, actually. But in any event, you take your hands and you just insert your hands, just your hands, into a Beis HaManuga, into a house which was declared Saras. According to Rabbi Akiva, your hands are a Rishon. According to the Chachamim, your hands are a Sheni. Now, by your hands going in without the rest of your body, that's not considered bia. Meaning, if fundamentally that was considered like you entered into the house, so then you in your entire body is now going to be tummy, obviously. So bia b'mikzat lo shmei bia. Good. V'hacha b'gzera yadav atu gufo kamiflagi. So obviously, by labeling your hands and just your hands tummy, we obviously means we're talking about a gzera d'rabbanan. Also good. Now, mar sava yadav kagufo shavin rabbanan, mar sava yadav ki adayim da'ama shavin rabbanan. And now, once there is a tumah d'rabbanan being slapped on your hands, what degree of tumah? And so the machlokus over here is as follows. Well, Rabbi Akiva will tell you, look, if you were to walk all the way into the house, what would you be? You'd be a Rishon. The house is an Avatama, and you would be a Rishon. Fine. So if your hands and only your hands just went in, so Rabbi Akiva says, so the Gzera Durabanan on your hands is that's going to be slapped with a Rishon. Whereas according to the Chachamim Mo'argo and Rabbi Akiva, they're going to say like this. What happens when hands become Tameh and just hands become Tameh? That's a standard Gzera of Yadayim, which standard is Sheni. So over here, if the Chachamim are going to make a Gzera on the hands, but they're going to give it the standard Tumah D'Rabbanan of Yadayim being a Sheni. Okay. So it can happen, admittedly, nearly impossible, but it can happen that your hands are a Rishon. So in terms of saying Pshat now in our Mishnah, if the shechita of the animal was a bloodless shechita, which means now that the animal never received hechsher, so the Mishnah says now as a bonus you can now handle the animal with yadayim mesuah, both with your hands, which are generally a sheni. So over here, don't worry because the meat is not mukshal kabel tumah. The question, I don't understand, even if the animal was mukshal kabel tumah, your sheni hands are not going to transmit tumah over to the animal, which is chulin. So right now, our second answer of the day is that we're talking about the really limited scenario in which your hands are a rishon. And since your hands are a rishon, so therefore they could transmit tumah, and because it was a bloodless shechita, so therefore you get this fringe benefit of being able to handle it. Let's just do a little bit more to finish this one segment of the Gemara. V'lukmeka Rabbi Akiva, damar yadav tchilos, havyan. Now, I don't understand. Why don't we say that our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva says that your hands are tchilos, they're a rishon. So, dilma kikama Rabbi Akiva, hanimila b'truma v'kachim, dechamira. The reason why we didn't set up like Rabbi Akiva, because we don't know Rabbi Akiva's real position. Meaning, yes, Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that when your hands go into a base of manuga, your hands are a rishon. But that may only be vis-a-vis truma and kachim, but not by chulin. Aval chulin shnios havyan. So, but regarding chulin, your hands, even according to Rabbi Akiva, may only be a sheni. Vilei havyan nami shnios dashamila le Rabbi Akiva damar sheni osa shlishi bechulin ditnan. So the Gemara says, but wait 1 second. What about the sugya in the end of the first parak of Pesachim, where we learned together back in the day, and we're reviewing now as well, that according to Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva extends chulin all the way to shlishi. How does Rabbi Akiva? With hechsher. Meaning the Gemara's question was, if the animal was bleeding, so then why do we even care? Your sheni hand shouldn't make the animal tummy. No, I understand that, but the diuk of the Mishnah is that if it was bleeding, so then you wouldn't be able to touch it. But the Gemara says, why not? So, but according to Rabbi Akiva, sheni can produce shlishi even by chulin. How do I know that? Did not, because we learned in a Mishnah. Bo bayom darsh Rabbi Akiva, on that very day, Rabbi Akiva darshans. That very day is the day in which Rabbi Gamliel was deposed from being the Rosh Hashiva, but from being the Nasi, and Rav Elazar ben Azariah took over. And on that day, Rav Elazar ben Azariah opened the doors of the yeshiva even wider. Rabbi Gamliel had the policy, the admission policy of Tocha Kabaro. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, let everybody into the Beis Medrash. And they added benches, and more people entered into the Beis Medrash. And on that day, there was a lot of darshaning. And bo bayom darsh Rabbi Akiva v'chol kli cheres, yitma tamei lo nemar ela yitma, letamei acherem limed al kikar sheni shi osa shlishi b'chulin. By saying this all way too quickly, right, if the sheretz goes into a kli cheres, the kli cheres is now a rishon, the sheretz is an av, the kli cheres is a rishon. The bread now in the kli cheres is a sheni. And the Torah describing that bread says, yitma, then not only does that bread become tameh, by the way, Rabbi Akiva understands the pasuk, it's able to transmit it onto something else. So according to Rabbi Akiva, a sheni can produce a shlishi. So over here, why not just simply propose that our Mishnah is following the viewpoint of Rabbi Akiva, and that a sheni can produce a shlishi. And the Gemara says, Hani mila betumah daraisa v'abadurabanan lo amar. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. Rabbi Akiva did darshan that. But Rabbi Akiva only darshan that when the sheni in question is a sheni d'oraisa, like the scenario that I just painted. The sheretz and the kli cheres, the food in the kli cheres. Sheretz makes the kli cheres a rishon min haTorah. The kli cheres makes the food inside of it a sheni min haTorah. So then Rabbi Akiva will say that it can transmit to a shlishi. But here we're talking about yadayim. Yadayim are only a sheni on a derabanan level. Rabbi Akiva will not say that a sheni midrabanan is going to transmit tuma over to a shlishi. That's why the Gemara never entertained the idea that our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Akiva.